And the foreclosure rate, by the way, is way up for the last 3 months. The arrears are way up. Now that the banks have rewritten the bankruptcy laws, they feel that they can foreclose. So all of that, basically, everybody's going to stay put. They're going to be frozen in. And what happens when you have a real estate downturn isn't that it's not like a stock market downturn. It's not that everybody then puts their property for sale and they buy it back cheap. They just, nothing gets sold. Nothing gets bought. And what you're having is that houses are much, much longer on the market. And if you do have to sell them, it's at a distressed price. So most people that are buying are going to auctions and trying to get things at distressed prices. So a lot of people try to sell just before the foreclosure, think I might as well get, I can't afford to make the payment, I might as well get what I can out of it. So people being squeezed, people in cities with manufacturing plants that are being closed down, like Detroit. You don't want to hold a house in Detroit.
If the banks are foreclosing on all these loans, are we going to see bank destabilization?
Bank destabilization? No, because the banks, bankers are pretty smart about all of this. They've been following, they knew the break was coming, and they've bought mortgage default insurance, or they originate the loans and they sell it to Fannie Mae, to the government, to package to sell to the mutual funds. So the banks have protected themselves. They're not in trouble. The mutual funds and the government are in trouble, and the insurance companies that have written the insurance are in trouble. The banks are not in trouble. And actually, if I did say they were in trouble, that's breaking a U.S. law, so I'm not allowed to say the banks are in trouble, but I actually don't think they're in trouble anyway. Okay, that's it.
You've been listening to economist Michael Hudson speaking last December at Raritan Community College. He has a website, www.michael-hudson.com. Regular listeners might have noticed that I've been playing a lot about the economy lately. That's because I agree that we're headed for a meltdown of the system. I say good riddance to bad rubbish. We can create a much better society. But we have to get through to the other side without succumbing to warlordism and with an ecosystem that can support life. In the end, what we need is clean food and water, shelter, and some energy. But most of all, we need community, both to get us through the hard times and to establish a new society based on common rights instead of greed and enclosure. Now is the time to make plans, if you've not yet begun. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica U.S., WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, or WMRW Warren.
Daddy was a bank robber, but he never hurt nobody. He just loved to live that way, and he loved to steal your money. Some is rich and some is poor, and that's the way the world is. But I don't believe in lying back and saying how bad your luck is. Daddy was a bank robber, but he never hurt nobody. He just loved to live that way, and he loved to steal your money. So we came to jazz it up. We never loved a shovel. Break your back to earn your pay, and don't forget to grovel. Daddy was a bank robber, but he never hurt nobody. He just loved to live that way, and he loved to steal your money. Imagine if all the boys in jail could get out now together. What do you think they'd want to say to us while we were being clever? Daddy was a bank robber, but he never hurt nobody. He just loved to live that way, and he loved to steal your money. Daddy was a bank robber, but he never hurt nobody. He just loved to live that way, and he loved to steal your money.
More than 30 million Americans are paying on college loans. Laws passed by the Gingrich Congress and signed by Bill Clinton in the 1990s basically privatized lending for education and exempted these lenders from many of the protections in place throughout other areas of the credit industry. The result has been excessive fees and penalties that can't be cleared through bankruptcy nor refinanced at a better rate, condemning borrowers to perpetual debt. It's common for students to emerge from advanced degree programs with $80,000 or more of debt. In addition to the personal impact of such debt on the graduate's future life, we are all affected. Many of these professionals are forced into corporate jobs to service the debt, unable to afford to take lower-paying public interest work that is so needed. But according to Student Loan Justice, an organization formed to challenge student loan usury, even students with relatively small loans can end up owing many times what they originally borrowed. Some trapped debtors have become perpetual fugitives or have even become so desperate they committed suicide. These students signed on the dotted line, never suspecting that their college could be setting them up for such disaster. But a recent investigation by New York State Attorney General Andrew Cuomo has revealed a system of kickbacks between colleges and the $85 billion student loan industry, which he described as an unholy alliance that may often not be in the student's best interest and in some cases may break the law. In a letter sent last week to every college and university in New York State and certain other schools across the country, Cuomo warned them to end or fully disclose potential conflict of interests in their relationships with private lenders. He also cautioned students and their families to protect themselves against these practices. The investigation has revealed that lenders pay financial kickbacks to schools based on a percentage of the loans that are directed to them. The kickbacks are designed to be larger if a school directs more student loans to the lender. And the kickbacks are even greater if the schools make the lender their exclusive preferred lender. Lenders provide all-expense-paid trips for financial aid officers to high-end resorts and other benefits like computer systems, funds, and credit lines for schools to use in exchange for them putting the lenders on their preferred lender lists, and offer schools large payments to drop out of the direct federal loan program so that the lenders get more business. Lenders will set up call centers for schools, so when the students call the school financial aid center, they actually get representatives of the lenders. They also sell the loans to other lenders, often wiping out the back-end benefits originally promised to the students without the students ever knowing. Alan Collinge, founder of Student Loan Justice, is on a national tour to support legislation that will give many strapped student loan borrowers the relief they need. He was in Ithaca earlier this month and spoke at an event on the Cornell campus, organized by Heather Dunbar, who introduces him.
Well, it has been a long time since the founding of this country, and in terms of changes, it's even been a long time since the Higher Education Act of 1965, and a lot of things have come to pass that impact on student debt in the meantime. And many people who have had to deal with defaulted student loans or very high interest have been waiting in isolation for a long time for a reform movement to hook their stars to. And just in the last several years, when many, many, many more changes have happened that are really important to take note of, especially if you're a student right now, several different resources have arisen And we're very lucky tonight to have Alan Collins, who is the founder of studentloanjustice.org. And I want to thank CRESP for allowing us to use this room, and the founder's room in Annabelle Taylor Hall. And I give you Alan Collins.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And let me just get started. And let me say that, you know, 10 years ago, had you told me that 10 years from now I would be traveling the country sort of preaching the gospel about student loan reform or higher education reform, I would have thought you were crazy. Now, having said that, had I told you 20 years ago that 20 years from now people would be fleeing the country, going off the grid, living in fear of their government, even killing themselves because of their student loans, you probably wouldn't have believed me either. But in fact, it is true. And this is fairly well described when looking at the legislation passed since 1990, but really, honestly, I mean, let's face it, legislation passed since 1994, which has, as Heather alluded to, changed and amended the Higher Education Act, taking the nonprofit goodness out of the student loan industry and replaced it with for-profit predation. And this has led to significant suffering on the part of decent citizens. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I joined this fight for personal reasons. I myself have 3 degrees in aerospace engineering from the University of Southern California, a minor in philosophy, a minor in industrial systems engineering. And for all that education, which I enjoyed immensely, the education experience, I accrued $38,000 in debt. So after graduation, it was off to Caltech as associate scientist, fairly prestigious but also fairly low-paying profession. So I made a decision after 2 years at Caltech to leave my position at Caltech with a tentative position at a defense firm at the Port of Long Beach. Well, this was 2 weeks before September 11th occurred. So unfortunately, due to a fairly bad decision on my part, I found myself unemployed, underemployed for the next year, actually a year and a half. Now, despite my best efforts to maintain my student loans in good stead, I was put into default. In other words, I applied for what's known as a deferment from my lender, who happened to be Sallie Mae, and I was denied. So very quickly, my student loans increased to in excess of $100,000 with penalties, fees, and compounded interest. This was very interesting to me, as you might expect, and I did a lot of research as to how it could be possible that this happened. And it's very simple. In 1994, there was a change in Congress, and the education committees on both the House and Senate side were taken over by gentlemen who were very interested in changing higher education. Now, also in 1995, actually, there was a company called Sallie Mae. Sallie Mae was a quasi-governmental entity which was in charge of repurchasing loans from banks in order to promote college access. Well, Sallie Mae decided to change into a for-profit corporation from a government-sponsored entity. And Congress, in cooperation with Sallie Mae, acceded to this change. So Sallie Mae spins off from the government, brings with them incredible clout on the Hill, a lobbying freight train, one might say. So Sallie Mae breaks off, and they get the laws changed. They get, let's just say that they had nearly every consumer protection, every standard consumer protection removed from student loans. This includes bankruptcy protection, number one. This includes statute of limitations. This allows for huge penalties and fees to be attached to delinquent debt. This allows for wages, tax, disability benefits, Social Security benefits to be taken by the holders of the loans in cases of delinquency. It's also allowed for suspension of state licenses to practice in one's field, and also allowed for termination from public employment. Student loans also are non-refinanceable in an open marketplace. In other words, Once you consolidate your student loans, you can never leave that lender. So these are protections that Congress erected specifically for the student loan industry and for none other. The results 10 years later are quite compelling. Sallie Mae's stock value has increased by nearly 2,000% in a decade. Sallie Mae as a company, which today comprises about 10,000 people, at its privatization comprised about 5,000, have paid themselves $3.6 billion in stock bonuses. And that stock, as I said, has increased by about 2,000%. That's about $630,000 per employee. So if you had worked for Sallie Mae for about 7 years, chances are you would have received nearly $700,000 in stock bonuses. And again, I'm not including the appreciation of the stock, which I mentioned. The CEO and chairman of Sallie Mae, Albert Lord, made a tender offer to purchase a Major League Baseball team about a year ago and is currently building his own private personal luxury golf course. So it's become very profitable for industry. And Sallie Mae, while it is for sure the biggest player, certainly is not the only player. There's been a sort of cottage industry of both non- and for-profit student loan companies that have made tremendous, unparalleled amounts of money, unparalleled to any similar student loan scenario in our nation's history. It's amazing. Simultaneously, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives of decent citizens have been absolutely destroyed. This is not nickel and dime stuff. Rather, it is financial ruin for millions of people. Let me just tell you a couple of stories. And this is a typical case. A student borrows $26,000 and falls behind. And the reason for falling behind on one's debt could be a medical condition. Maybe it was a natural disaster. Maybe it was, maybe it was inattentiveness. But for whatever the case. So the student borrows $26,000, is thrust into default. Well, his loans very quickly could double or triple with penalties, fees, and interest. And not only that, but they can raise your interest rates to 28% at the maximum. They can and do. So the person I have in mind, his name is Britt Napoli, originally borrowed $26,000, lost his home in the Northridge earthquake in 1993 and defaulted on his student loans. Well, flash forward today, currently Britt has paid $31,000 on this original $26,000 in loans. He currently owes $81,000 on that initial $26,000 note, and his interest has been increased to 25%. So this is a debt that, for Mr. Napoli, will absolutely never go away. Student loan justice was started 2 years ago to get the stories from borrowers who have been through this trap. We've received stories from family members of people who have committed suicide, multiple cases. We've received stories from people who have been literally forced to flee the country and are currently outside the United States on account of their student loans. We've received stories from people who have been forced to live off the grid and live truly in fear of their government. And it's not because they can't or are unwilling to repay what they borrowed, plus a reasonable amount of interest, but rather it's because of the exorbitant, astronomical penalties, fees, and harsh collection tactics which are allowed to be levied against these borrowers. We have doctors in studentloanjustice.org who have been relegated to driving trucks because their states have taken away their licenses to practice. I just want to add or sort of emphasize that these are folks for whom typically their debt increase is on the order of 300 to 500%, often more. So we started Student Loan Justice about 2 years ago, and without advertising or anything, we got about 200 members in the first 9 months. In the second 9 months, we got about 2,000 members, where currently today we've got about 2,500 members of people who feel, not only feel, but are truly victimized by this predatory lending situation. These are people who are very willing and usually able to repay what they borrowed plus interest, but their debt has exploded to unsurmountable proportions. So we were featured in Fortune magazine in December in a piece by Bethany McLean, She's the reporter who won the Pulitzer Prize for breaking the Enron story. And also, our research was used in a number of other newspaper articles. Probably the most interesting phenomenon about this organization of late is us being featured in the top story on 60 Minutes last May 7th. So I think it's pretty compelling that an organization such as this, started by somebody with no expertise in the field of student loans except personal experience, could attract so much attention from so many credible news organizations. And so I'm thrilled, and I'm glad that people across the country are finally starting to come out of the woodwork. Because, you know, one thing I really haven't touched on here is sort of the psychological drama that goes on behind the scenes for people with student loans. They're ashamed, they're intimidated, they're embarrassed, and they're very reluctant to stand up and publicly stick up for themselves and to say, yes, this happened to me. Because let's face it, folks, this is predatory lending. If you ask 10 students in college right now the most simple questions, like who they got their student loans from, about 8 out of 10 wouldn't be able to give you the answer to that question. Harvard professor Elizabeth Warren said it very clearly, and I think rightly stated, when she mentioned that students are like turkeys being served up at the Thanksgiving dinner when it comes to student loans. And this is very, let's say, pervasive in university culture. And I'm going to give you a for instance, and I certainly don't want to bash Cornell University, who in their good grace have allowed us to be here today. But even Cornell University has what so-called preferred lender arrangements, whereby due to incentives, financial or otherwise, usually financial, universities will steer students towards one bank or another for their student loans. Typically, there's a financial transaction on the back end whereby the university actually gets paid a cash payment by the lender. We think this is, at Student Loan Justice, we think this is highly anti-competitive. Certainly, it doesn't serve the best interests of the students, but rather serves the financial interests of the university. And this is one element that we would like to see go away in the student loan industry. There are four other items that we are really trying to get done as a part of our newly formed political action committee. Number one is a repayment option for people who have seen their loans double, triple, quadruple, or even worse. What we're asking Congress to do is to allow defaulted borrowers who've been in default for a minimum length of time, say 5 to 7 years, to repay every dollar that the government paid for their student loans. This includes principal. This includes interest. This includes a boatload of profit for the lenders. We think this is reasonable. We think this is fair. We think this is kitchen table common sense. Given the absence of bankruptcy protection, we think this is more than fair. Number two, people should be able to refinance their student loan debt. You know, people graduate and consolidate with a Sallie Mae or a Nelnet or a Citibank, not realizing that they will never, ever, in the life of that loan, be able to leave that lender. It's simply illegal, and there's no good reason for it. And it's a bit ironic that a Republican Congress allowed these barriers to competition to be erected, but there it is. How ironic that a recent bill by Senator Hillary Clinton addresses exactly this issue. And allows refinancing for student loans. Number three, as I mentioned briefly before, we think the preferred lender arrangements should be either highly regulated or perhaps banned. It certainly is an anti-competitive practice that doesn't speak to the interests of the students. And, you know, the students need far more information than they're getting today. And so banning preferred lender is a part of that. But truly, let's face it, we are in dire need of much more intensive, let's call it entrance counseling. Students should know who they're getting their loans from. Students should know that Sallie Mae, for instance, is not a part of the federal government. Students should know what their interest rate is going to be. More than that, students should know the terms, the infrastructure behind the loan. Students should know that under current law, there is no bankruptcy protection, no statute of limitations. No requirements for adherence to Fair Debt Collection Practices Act on the part of the student lenders. Students should know that their Social Security, their wages, their income tax, their very employment can be garnished and suspended as a result of their student loans. These are things that students should know. And so we're certainly pushing for more information on that. Standard consumer protections that I mentioned are extremely important. Frankly, I want to tell you about one dirty trick student industry pulled. So it was quite a coup that the student loan industry was able to get bankruptcy protection and statute of limitations removed for these public federally guaranteed loans that we've been talking about. But up to now, I haven't even mentioned private loans. There's a whole other sector of student loans called private loans, which are not federally guaranteed. Well, just like they took bankruptcy protection away from student loans in 1997, so too have they moved over and taken bankruptcy protection away from private loans. So these are loans that are not guaranteed by the federal or other governments. And this, to me, is nothing but sheer chutzpah on the part of the student loan industry and a true testament to their freight train-like lobbying strength on the Hill. Truly amazing. What other private loan could you get bankruptcy protection taken away from? Credit cards? No. Home loans? No. Boat loan? No. None of the type of debt besides student loans. So Student Loan Justice Org started out as a grassroots organization. We're now a viable political action committee. We're currently on a nationwide bus tour visiting all the members of the House and Senate education committees, first of all in their home districts. And then we'll come around to Washington, D.C. as a sort of a terminus where we really, pound the stakes down and do hopefully some pretty heavy lifting. And so far, we've covered about a half of our district destinations, and we should be in Washington, D.C. around April 1st. I can't tell you how hopeful and encouraged I am as well. There have been some really important movements by Congress, by the new leadership in Congress, which is extremely compelling. Hillary Clinton, as I mentioned, introduced the Senate Student Borrower Bill of Rights. This was first introduced last year as a result of our organization's heavy, I don't want to say lobbying, but influence on the issue at that time. And then reintroduced the bill, a much improved version of the bill, this year, February 13th. This is S-511. Senator Kennedy has come forth with a bevy of student-friendly student loan legislation that would both increase grants, would require something called the Student Loan Sunshine Act, would require universities to disclose relationships they have with the lenders and others, and also a decrease in the interest rate on student loans, which... that's the one that got all the press, but to be honest with you, the more important pieces of legislation to come through were the first two that I've just mentioned here. So this is a groundswell. This has not happened in 12 years now, and so we're very excited. There's still a lot of heavy lifting that needs to get done. I mean, obviously, well, in fact, it's not obvious, but I should tell you that the Student Borrower Bill of Rights, for instance, probably is not going to go anywhere. It will rather, I mean, honestly, it's probably not going to go anywhere. It will be used rather, hopefully, that elements of it, the most important elements that I mentioned earlier, will be subsumed into sort of a bigger bill, probably part of the higher education reauthorization of whatever year it's going to end up being reauthorized, and hopefully very soon. So we're very happy that we've been able to make some progress in this area over the past 2 years, but there is certainly a long way to go. And with the cost of college having increased at twice the rate of inflation for the past 20 years and probably longer, I think it's high time that something be done. I mean, the students just can't afford for this profit student loan system anymore. It's just not workable for them. And 10 years from now, gone unabated, I could certainly see some very large societal impacts, if it's not too late already. The next 5 years will be very telling. So that's really all I had planned to talk about. I could talk about the nitty-gritty of the very corrupt practices of the Congress over the past 12 years. I'd be very happy to go into that if you're interested. But for now, I think I'll just open it up to questions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would you say the cost of college increased twofold with inflation, or?
Yes, the cost of college has increased at roughly double the rate of inflation for the past 20 years. In fact, Cornell University, I must say, I was quite stunned to see, has an annual cost, total cost of attendance of about $46,000 per year. And so I would bet that 10 years ago that cost was roughly half that.
Just what specifically happens when a borrower becomes disabled or can't pay back a student loan because of a financial setback?
Yeah, typically the way a federal loan works is when the borrower becomes 270 days late, that's 9 months, the loan is put into default, at which time it is sold. Now, although the federal government, at the end of the day, guarantees these loans, there's actually a usually nonprofit middleman called a guarantor, which doesn't actually guarantee anything, but rather they take the loan, they add 25% right off the top, and they jack the interest rate to as high as 28%, and then they begin using those draconian collection tools that I mentioned, the wage garnishment, the Social Security garnishment, whatever they can get from the borrower in order to cover these obscenely high penalties, fees, increased interest, etc. And the borrower is compelled to go through what's called loan rehabilitation, which is, well, for all intents and purposes, it's a scam, it's a hustle, it's a joke. Loan rehabilitation requires the borrower to make 10, 11 on-time payments on this vastly inflated amount, and after 11 or so on-time payments, the loan is quote-unquote rehabilitated, where it can be sold to a lender to become a loan again with all the penalties and fees. Plus additional fees, origination and additional guarantee fees, are added onto the loan where, you know, typically it's going to be double, if not triple, the amount that it was at the time it defaulted. But yet the borrower now has a rehabilitated loan. So barring a lack of rehabilitation, the borrower, his or her life is for all intents and purposes, paralyzed. The person will have a horrible credit record to begin with. The wage, tax, Social Security, disability garnishment. Beyond that, person will probably not be able to get a job in the public sector, probably will not be able to get a job that requires a security clearance, could actually be fired from a public job if they have an existing public employment status. And like I said, with the increasing interest, which Canon does get jacked up to 25, 26, 27, 28%. This person's, unless they have a drastic change of fortune, is stuck in a downward spiral. I don't know if I mentioned, but I actually have doctors in student loan justice that are driving trucks. I think I did mention that. So it's not a pretty scenario, and there's millions of people that this has happened to, the large majority of whom are intimidated, discouraged, and sort of cowed into silence. But that's beginning to change now as a result of organizations like these.
One thing I don't understand is they take their licenses away, which means now they can't make money to pay the loan off with.
Yeah, that's right. It's a horrible downward spiral.
It's like they don't want you to pay them. They just want to ruin your life.
It seems that way to a lot of people.
Because if you were to pay them, you know, if you had enough money, you might be able to pay the loan off and you wouldn't owe anything more. But if they can keep you from paying them, they'll have you in hock for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, you'd be, I am amazed at how often I come across the phrase indentured servitude as I go through my research and I read submissions from the thousands of borrowers who have come to the website. This is real stuff. People truly do feel like slaves to this debt. There's nothing to compare it to, in other words. If you borrow $50,000 on a credit card and go to Las Vegas and blow it in a weekend, well, you can call your credit card company, which is most people would agree, a fairly shady type of debt instrument. And the credit card company typically will say, look, okay, write us a check for $45,000 or $40,000, even less than the amount borrowed, and go away. Now, you take that same person that borrowed $50,000 and went to school, not only will the lender not forgive any portion of the principal, that debt will double, triple, or worse with accrued interest, penalties, and fees, and those fees will not be waived by the lender. They just won't be, because they don't have to, because all the consumer protections that I mentioned earlier are not there for student loans. You know, I would urge the listeners to this and the folks in the audience here today, if the website hasn't been taken down, I would urge you all to go to premiercredit.com. This is a for-profit student loan collection company. It's premiercredit.com. Just go there for 5 seconds, and my point will be proven. This company has a 4,000-gallon shark tank in their corporate headquarters. The purpose of this shark tank, ostensibly, is to serve as visual inspiration for their employees, they say. And, you know, I mean, I think it really says it all. Go to their website, and you will see sharks in 5 seconds swimming across your screen.
One thing I read somewhere, though, was people would go, like, to a party or something, and they'd talk about the jobs they work at and all. I heard that if someone says that they work for a collection agency, suddenly everybody will walk away from them.
Well, that certainly doesn't... That doesn't surprise me. You know, I, after having lived this, my own personal experience, I have very little respect and a lot of contempt for people that profit from the misfortune of others. And that is exactly what the student loan industry is doing in this case.
You say you have thousands of submissions from by people of their stories.
That's right.
Is this being read by people up on the hill in Washington?
It is. I can't be exactly specific, but let me just say that I've gotten a great reception on the Hill, particularly in the last 2 to 3 months. Kind of one of my greatest successes and one of my inspirations for starting this political action committee was about a year ago, I went to Washington, D.C., just knocking on doors. And most of the doors were shut in my face, but there was actually one senator who actually, you know, I met with her staff constantly, and this was Hillary Clinton. The one office that actually opened their doors to me and my stories. So I worked with these folks for months on end, and they took a true interest in the stories that I submitted to them from New York State, obviously. Well, within 5 months, they had formulated, with huge input from Student Loan Justice, the Student Borrower Bill of Rights. And again, we're a nonpartisan PAC. I know this is a presidential year, and certainly I don't want this to be construed as any sort of... you know, stumping for Hillary Clinton. That's not what we're about. But I have to give credit where credit is due. So Hillary Clinton has been a great help for us. Dick Durbin, believe it or not, out of Illinois, has been hugely aware of this problem. Senator Ted Kennedy is completely on the right side of this argument. In fact, as of the most recent elections, Senator Kennedy said straight up, and he's the new chairman, by the way, of the Senate Education Committee, that it's time to take the money changers out of the temples of higher education. And, I mean, that is such a different tact than we've heard from the previous leaders of the House and Senate Education Committees. Let me tell you quickly about the previous leaders of the House and Senate Education Committees. Senator Mike Enzi, chairman of the Senate Committee, his daughter has received hundreds of thousands of dollars from student loan companies, her business. John Boehner, the former chairman of the House Education Committee, he has received hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, from student loan companies to his PAC and campaign committees. Buck McEwen, most recent chairman of the House Education Committee, his wife draws a salary off of his political action committee. And Buck McEwen is the largest recipient of PAC money from student lenders of any member of Congress. So contrast that. The three people who really matter taking money from the student loan industry and passing these hugely favorable laws to the comments that we just heard Senator Kennedy make. And I think you'll agree that higher education is going to change drastically and for the better in the coming term.
Are there new people who need to get paid off by
Well, I mean, certainly the people that are most important are Ruben Hinosa in the House, George Miller out of California in the House. George Miller is now, and he's a great guy, and he's said some great rhetoric as well. He's chairman of the House Education Committee. Senator Kennedy, who is the chairman on the Senate side. And really, I mean, the Senate is such a powerful and small committee. Any member of the Senate committee would be highly useful. We have a couple of new members on the Senate side. And before this last election, 16 of the 17 people on the Senate side had received Sallie Mae money. And something like, I want to say, 46 of the 51 members on the House side had received Sallie Mae money. So that's changed a bit now. We've got some new members. It's a perfect time for political action.
So have you worked with any of the major consumer protection organizations?
Yeah, I work with the public interest research groups. We sort of help each other out and share information. Also something called Student Loan Watch, and also the Institute for College Access and Success. And believe it or not, this is fairly interesting, but the week after the 60 Minutes show aired, both Ralph Nader and Michael Moore called student loan justice, actually Ralph Nader called twice. And so we're very very encouraged that folks like Nader and, I guess, on the media side, Michael Moore took an interest. And at the same time, the Adam Smith Society, which is a hugely conservative, free market organization, wrote an editorial completely supporting the arguments that we are making. That's right. They're libertarian. They're hardcore libertarian in the true sense of the word. Very laissez-faire. Very interested in a free market, and not interested in much else beyond a free market. But that's their problem. But yeah, in fact, they wrote a very scathing editorial, which supported 3 out of 5 of our PAC agenda items. And so we were thrilled to see both elements from the right and the left coming to strongly support student loan justice.
Isn't there a law that protects people against illegal practices in collections?
That's a good point. Creditors typically are governed by what's called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, FDCPA. However, and this is again a monument to the lobbying clout of the student loan industry, student loan holders are exempt, specifically written into the law, student loan holders are exempt from Fair Debt Collection Practices Act statutes. So as a result, I'm getting members who are having their employers called. Their employers are being threatened with imprisonment, for instance, to share information about the employee and accede to garnishment orders, and on and on. In fact, I would encourage you to go to studentloanjustice.org and just read some of the victim stories. People are getting their family members called. People are getting called after repeated requests for ceasing of the activity. People are being lied to left and right. Collection companies are representing themselves as being actually part of the federal government, which is, again, highly illegal. And so I truly hope that there will be an investigation fairly soon into these collection practices.
There was one person I knew who would put like a web blog on the internet. She talked about where she was being harassed by this collection agency over a student loan, and went to, a psychologist about it, and they tried to get the call stopped for a couple of years, and of course, they're going to stop calling.
Yeah.
But she talked about she felt like taking her own life and all.
Yeah.
Anyway, she even said that one of the people who called her up suggested that you go and rob a bank to get the money to pay them with.
You know, that's interesting that you should say that. I've had members where literally the collection companies have suggested that they take up prostitution or that they commit other crimes in order to come up with the money to pay their student loans.
Like even selling crack cocaine to little kids or something?
Yeah, these folks have no scruples. We're dealing with a class of folks for whom the bottom line is profit. And whatever they can get to get the debtor to start writing hopefully big checks, they will say whatever they need to say. And if they don't have the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act out as a consumer protection, then, you know, what recourse does the borrower, the consumer, have?
Question? One thing I'd like to see is a lot of these, not only the owners of, like, the collection agencies, but also even the employees that make the calls, I'd like to see them prosecuted. I don't know if that's possible.
Well, that day may come. It's very interesting, you know, when there's a change in Congress like the one that we've recently seen. It's quite amazing the investigations that never would have happened under the old Congress start to begin under the new Congress. So we're just starting to see a number of investigations starting. In fact, the Attorney General of the State of New York is looking into Sallie Mae preferred lender arrangements, for instance. Now, that's completely different from the federal Congress that I've been talking to up till now, but I think it's very encouraging. Senator Kennedy has also enacted investigations into, let's say, collection practices, and we'll be very interested to see where that goes. Question?
Good question. What typically causes people to go public with this very personal financial problem? Because you hear about it more in the news now. Is there something in the legal climate? And what is the person who starts to speak out? What is typically their situation that would make them talk about something that they were ashamed of in public?
Well, it's truly being trapped. When you corner somebody, they're only going to stay in that corner for so long, and when the pressure gets too much to bear, they're going to start fighting back. And I think that's what we're seeing in this country here. You know, decent people that are creditworthy and are willing to repay their debt, but yet are prevented from doing so by these predatory, yet legal fees, etc. They undergo massive, let's say, psychological strain. When you wake up every day with a debt that is growing and where every ounce of your energy towards resolving that debt is wasted and not listened to, when there's not a negotiation on the part of the lenders. After the first week, second week, first month, well, it's, you know, it's difficult. After the first year, it's, what do? It's almost depressing. After the second year, eventually people snap and they've got to deal with the problem. And what we're seeing is just a raw nerve that's been exposed in the United States. And that's one thing that certainly as an organization is our strength. Our members are extremely committed because they have to be. This is an issue. And like I said, this is not nickel and dime stuff. This is financial ruin for millions of Americans. There's about 5 million defaulted loans out there. And that's just on the federal side. I haven't even talked about private side. Yep.
What steps can people take to maybe support legislative change? Because there are many people who, for whom this is maybe their only political issue. They take it very personally, but they don't have experience working with political parties or political causes. What can just a normal person do?
Right. Well, I would suggest coming to the website, studentloanjustice.org, and go to the What We Can Do, the Take Action tab. These are very simple steps that folks can do. It doesn't take a lot of time. But it involves calling the House and Senate Education Committees, even if you're not a constituent, because these people really need to hear it. Hopefully, hopefully most people can find a legislator that's close to them through this portion of the website. Second of all, it's very important that the word be spread about this, and that people, as they begin to stand up and go public, encourage others to do the same, because there's true strength in numbers. I cannot tell you how true that is and how important it is for people stuck in this embarrassing financial nightmare to seek out and find others in their similar circumstances. Obviously, you know, we've got brochures on the website that are available for obviously for free. And certainly as you know, if they could distribute those as they see appropriate, that would be very helpful. And a personal plug, obviously financial support for the Political Action Committee would be useful. We have fairly low budgetary requirements, so we're not really pitching financial support of the PAC strongly. But nonetheless, is you know obviously helpful. This helps fund the bus tour that we're currently on, and will help fund sort of the writing of, let's say, strategic checks to Congress, to key members of Congress down the road. And beyond that, anything they can think of. The one good thing about student loan recipients that are in this trouble, they're typically very smart, dedicated, bright, creative individuals. And, you know, this truly is a grassroots movement. And so, you know, I would just say be creative. And anything that you can do as an individual that I haven't mentioned here, you know, don't let us hold you back. Just go do it and let us know so that we can brag about it and maybe find some best practices and so on.
The reason I came up here tonight was 3 years ago I lost my job at some company that closed up. So anyway, they told us that these TAA grants were available where, you know, they'd pay for us to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to this business institute, but then they pulled a switcheroo on me where they go use a student loan instead of the TAA.
Oh.
Because they didn't want TAA because they can't rip me off. You know, if you try to rip the state off, you're going to get in trouble.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to hear that. And I hear that a lot, particularly these small for-profit schools. You know, they'll make something sound like a grant when, in fact, it's a loan. And often it's a very high interest loan as well.
Yeah, because I kept telling them that it was TAA, and then I started attending classes, and then in the meantime, for some reason, I went down to Tawanda where this job service office was
mm-hmm.
to see the guy who was in charge of the TAA grants.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I said something to him, then I walked away from him, then he called me back, and because he found out it never went through. So he told me to stop attending classes now.
Really?
I went back to the place with the intention to drop out. They talked me into staying and saying that the problem would be taken care of. I didn't hear anything from them, so I thought, yeah, something isn't right here. So then one night I just didn't go in, and I stopped going. Then later on I get a call from them saying that they would clear the mess up and that come October that TAA would start paying for it and they would waive the fees for the previous time I was there. But then I had the sixth sense, something was telling me don't do that, there's something not right here. So I never went back. Then I end up with this, except they never told me how to make payments or anything. It went straight to a collection agency.
So are you saying you're getting letters from a student loan collection agency at this point?
However, I went to the school about it, and they offered to accept $50 a month. Unfortunately, if you're late so much as one day, it goes right to the collection.
So it sounds to me like you unwittingly signed student loan documents, maybe without understanding. Perhaps without, likely, I don't know, from what you say, without being told that it was actually a student loan.
And of course, what they'll ask for is like $2,000-something. However, what I owe the school's like, as of now, $1,200. And I think I had to check through a lawyer first, but right now I'm in a position I could pay the thing off in full, which I'm thinking of doing because I don't want to take a chance should something happen that I couldn't make the payments.
Yeah, the chances are if this is a student loan that went into default, what you're being asked to pay it's probably double, if not more, than what you originally borrowed. And so as, you know, as a concerned consumer, I would certainly look at this and you know, think about how much you really think that you deserve to pay on
this.
In
what ways I'm paying the school directly, and you know, if I keep up payments, I don't hear anything from the collection agency. What happens, one day I paid it on the day it was due, mm-hmm. and it was some new person working there. They didn't post it right away.
Right.
What do I notice is they seem incompetent when it comes to acknowledging your payment, but they're on the ball when it comes to notifying the collection agencies.
Yeah.
Another thing, I wouldn't want to work for a collection agency because I would have to worry, are one of these people going to come after me? You know, one of the debtors might do me in.
Well, you know, if you're engaged in an activity that makes, for all intents and purposes, unearned money from people who can least afford to pay that money, well, you should expect that there are going to be some people that get very angry about what you do. And so I agree. I wouldn't want to be I would never be a collection company employee. Yep.
I've heard of there's a process called consolidation or family consolidation. Is that different from rehabilitation of a loan? And I was wondering what asking for validation of a loan is.
Yeah, consolidation of a loan is what a lot of people choose to do and are advertised very heavily to do upon graduation. And that is taking all the loans that you've received during college and combining them into one loan. This is a highly competitive area these days in the student loan industry, primarily because of the lack of consumer protections that I mentioned earlier and the inability to refinance the debt. So there's a lot of people that want that consolidated loan, but they know that they only get one shot at your business because once consolidated, you can never leave the lender. So yeah, consolidation is pretty much what it sounds like. Now, as far as validation of debt is concerned, if you go delinquent on your debt, legally, the holders of the loans are required to keep the source documents for your original loans for the length of the life of the loan. And so you have every right as a borrower to ask to have them validate the debt, verify the debt through the display and sharing of these original source source promissory notes. So if a student loan company can't produce those documents, then you know, legally you're in a very good position to get the debt forgiven, perhaps, if they cannot verify the debt. Yeah. Okay. And don't forget, go to studentloanjustice.org.
Alan Collins, founder of Student Loan Justice, speaking earlier this month in Ithaca. Thanks to event organizer Heather Dunbar and recordist Paul Goldschmidt for making this available. You can read more about the proposed legislation, SB 3255, as well as other related issues at studentloanjustice.org. And you can download this and all previous episodes of this show online at unwelcomeguests.org. Bank Robber was performed by Chumbawamba. And our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thanks for listening. My end, for my guns and my saddle will always be filled by unwelcome.